But we're going to question that because pagans always have dual meanings. In other words, they have a meaning that's supposed to just be bland. But then there's a deeper meaning, a meaning that has a spiritual significance to it for pagans, for other pagans. And when they see it, and when they see these things, they salivate with joy.
I've read the fiery gospel written, burnished rows of steel, as you deal with my condemner, so with you my grace shall deal. You'll let the hero born of woman crush the serpent with his heel, since God is marching on.
All right, welcome to Christian Overcomers, and thank you for joining us for this Bible study. Revelation 12Z-2, iOS. Equals phallus, seed, and serpent. This is a pagan, iOS is a pagan acronym or cipher that we're going to discuss today. In fact, this is going to be the second to the last of our series of studies on counting or computing the number of the beast. In our this study, we're going to talk about this cipher some and some other things about homosexuality. But in our final study, we're going to kind of come to a conclusion. We're going to analyze everything we've learned thus far on the number 666 and how and why paganism uses it. And I can't say that it's going to be our last study we'll ever do on computing the number 666. But it will be our last in this series, and then we're going to move on. We're going to move on through to Revelation chapter 14 and so on. But hey, let's start this out. I'm going to start this out by reading a quote, reading a post that I wrote on Facebook. And here it is. Unlearn lessons from the past. Many people believe that acceptance of homosexuality is something new and that we've finally evolved enough as a society to accept it. There is no nice way of saying it. These people are ignorant of history. Acceptance of homosexuality was the norm before the spread of Christianity 2,000 years ago. In fact, homosexuality played a central, even a spiritual role in virtually every pagan nation, from Rome to Greece to Canaan and Sodom. It was everywhere. And, you know, today we live in a generation where people believe that this is something new. Acceptance of homosexuality is something that only a modern, enlightened or progressive people can accept. But the thing is, our forefathers, the forefathers of Western Christian civilization, they were well aware of homosexuality and paganism, and that's why there were laws prohibiting sodomy. Even some in the early colonies of America that demanded the death penalty for it. So they knew the dangers of homosexuality and how it corrupts a nation. And of course, homosexuality isn't the only sin, but it is one of the chief sins of Sodom. And one of the chief sins that really attacks the foundations that God has laid for a society. And they're showing their ignorance of history when they think, oh, this is so great. We are so wise these days. Now we can understand that homosexuality is good for society. Again, the forefathers of Western Christian civilization 2,000 years ago. And sure, it's had its ups and downs. But they rejected homosexuality for a reason. So who's enlightened? People who don't learn from the past or people who have learned from the past? Anyways, we're going to prove in this study somewhat the pagan roots of homosexuality. And let's go back to this slide here of this acrostic or acronym or a cipher. We analyzed this in our study we did several studies ago titled The Names of Blasphemy. And we found that there was an acrostic here, IOSU, and then this other word for 666 that is a, we're not going to go into that today, but the serpent in the middle of Christ, basically. But we didn't really talk a lot about this IOSU. And we're going to talk about that here today. Primarily IOS, as we see up here. From page 336 of the computation of 666, we find that it reads, the three most celebrated emblems carried in the Greek mysteries were the phallus, or the iota, which looks like our letter I, the egg, or the omicron, and the serpent, or the Greek letter phi. Or otherwise, the phallus, the ione, that's the female organs there, or the umbilicus and the serpent. So these were the three most celebrated emblems among paganism. If you don't know what a phallus is, we're talking about the male sexual organ. They would actually parade these on the streets. They would be carrying them. Does that look familiar to you today? When you see the gay pride celebrations happening throughout our cities, what you're seeing is something that's not much different than they used to do 2,000 years ago in pagan Rome and pagan Greece. They celebrated that sexual organ and flaunted it and lived in all kinds of sexual immorality. My friends, paganism is coming back. Oh yeah, it's been here, it's been in America, it's been working its way for some time now in our music industries and so forth. But when you see the Supreme Court of the United States redefine marriage to include a man marrying a man or a woman marrying a woman, we've seen paganism make its greatest advance upon civilization, Western Christian civilization. Things are going to change from here on out, my friends. And we need to be ready for that. In a sense, you could say the beast is rearing its ugly head up once again. All right. Three cryptic letters used by paganism. Again, the iota, the omicron, and the phi. Now, knowing paganism, throughout different languages and things like that, they change letters. And they change the names of their gods. They adapt. In other words, they adapt to the culture. But they always have their secret little mysteries. And they put them out there for the wise to be able to see, so to speak, the wise in paganism. So I believe that since this, I'll go back here, since this phi or phi represented the serpent, we know also that the S represents the serpent. So we can assume that S is basically the same thing as the phi. So then we have the three letters here. It looks like our letter I can be the same as our letter I, or this is the Greek iota, omicron, and sigma, or IOS. All right. I equals the phallus. O equals the sun seed. And S equals the serpent. And we're going to talk about what that means here in a little bit. But I want to look at something here. Now, many of you, when you saw the letter IOS, many of you probably thought, man, I've seen that before. Where have I seen that? And if you look at the Apple logo here, and their operating system is the is iOS. Is that just a coincidence? Well, that's something we're going to look into towards the end of this study to see if that's a coincidence. I know on the surface, many people believe it means Internet Operating System. But we're going to question that because pagans always have dual meanings. In other words, they have a meaning that's supposed to just be bland. But then there's a deeper meaning, a meaning that has a spiritual significance to it for pagans, for other pagans. And when they see it, and when they see these things, they salivate with joy. All right. So what does the I mean to Apple? Well, we'll discuss that a little bit too, of some possibilities. Again, the bland meaning, many people believe it just means internet. Well, even the founder of Apple, Steve Jobs, admits that it doesn't just mean that. Anyways, we'll move on. Now, speaking of this iOS here, we got there's this Greek god named Helios. And what we see here is the letters iOS at the end of it. Now, as we've been researching 666, we've been finding out that it always goes back in one way or the other to the sun, the pagan sun god. And here we have here, Helios is the pagan sun god. You see the rays of light and the sun behind him there. And I thought it was interesting. He's riding four horses, probably symbolizing the four seasons. But it made me also think about the four horsemen of the apocalypse that march out to destroy, to divide and conquer the world. Very interesting. All right. From Wikipedia, we'll pull this up. We'll read a little bit from Helios here. It's from the ancient Greek. And here we see the iota, omicron, sigma, or iOS. Helios, the Latinizes Helios and so forth. We'll go over here. It says, was the personification of the sun in Greek mythology. He is the Titan Hyperion and the Titaness. I'm not going to probably say all these words right because I'm not sounded out all of these pagan names here. But we'll do our best here. Theia. Hesiod, also, and I'm going to skip some of them. All right, you can check this out on Wikipedia if you want. Helios was also described as a handsome titan crowned with the shining aurora of the sun, who drove the chariot of the sun across the sky each day to earth, circling Oceanus, and through the world ocean returned to the east at night. He said to drive golden chariots and fiery, okay, and the fiery names of them are these things. But I'm going to go down here. It says, as time passed, Helios was increasingly identified with the god of light, Apollo. However, in spite of their syncretism, they were also often viewed as two distinct gods or titan. Helios was a titan, whereas Apollo was an Olympian. All right. The equivalent of Helios in Roman mythology was Sol, specifically, or Sol Invictus, meaning the sun god. It all comes back to this sun god. and 666. They're going by many different names as well, and the number 666. Now, Apollo, that should remind you of something. In the Greek, what was the angel of the bottomless pit called? Remember, it said his Hebrew name was Abaddon, and his Greek name was Apollyon. Why did God give us those two names? Could it be that, you know, Abaddon, the death angel, and Apollyon? Well, I'll say it this way. Could it be that God was trying to help us identify who this false pagan god was in different cultures throughout time and connect the dots to know that they're one and the same? All pointing back to the mystery of 666, the number of a man. Think about that. All right. Phallus. Basically, what phallus worship was sex worship. And it wasn't always homosexual sex. It could be heterosexual sex as well, outside of marriage. And this, we see this so often today. I mean, everywhere you turn on the TV, whether it's a commercial. Now, today, I notice after the Supreme Court ruling that there are all kinds of homosexual commercials on. Or, you know, if you look closely, you can see it's either a homosexual or somebody acting out with homosexual behavior. And that's only the beginning, my friends. It's only the beginning. But besides that, before that, it's probably going to shift more towards the homosexual stuff. But before that, all we could see was half-naked women on just about every commercial, every music video these days. They have to show basically everything. Our culture is so filled with sex to the point where we've fallen into a stupor. A drunken spiritual stupor. Because, you know, when sex is always on the minds of our people, not only does it create all kinds of, not only does it break apart the family, whether it's through adultery and things like that, but I believe it also dumbs down the mind to spiritual truth. Because you're down to your base animal instinct. All the time, instead of being up here, you're thinking about the flesh and the pleasures of the flesh. And it's by design. Satan knows what he's doing. What this does is it makes man into a physical animal who only thinks about created things. And pleasure. Excuse me. All right. Which made me think about something. You know, I hadn't realized this before when reading about Mystery Babylon. And when we get to the 17th chapter, we'll talk more about it. But in there, she is described as not just being a harlot, not just the mother of harlots, but also the mother of abominations. Now, if you know from Leviticus, I think it's 13, homosexuality is considered an abomination. So that makes it interesting here. Let's go to Revelation 17, verse 4. I'm going to read it here. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand, full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. So what do we see here? We're talking about the phallus worship. Mystery Babylon is not only, what we need to realize is that you can't just say this is spiritual fornication. Yes, it is. But part of Mystery Babylon's idolatry is sex worship. Of course, we're not talking about sex between in a lawful marriage in God's eyes between a man and a woman. There's nothing wrong with that. God created it for our pleasure as well as for procreation. But when we're talking about all kinds of sexual, this is talking about sexual immorality to include homosexuality. That's what she's the mother of. Disgusting filth. And when you go into paganism, it's all, I mean, you go on, you read and study about their history, their gods, their temples. There were male prostitutes there. There were female prostitutes. There were orgies out in the woods. Orgies in the temples. A disgusting civilization. That's why homosexuality, it's been proven, it destroys the society. It's destroyed empires. All right. Verse 5, and upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. Of course, now homosexuality isn't the only abomination. However, in this context, I believe it's referring to sex worship. Again, whether it's fornication or homosexuality, phallic worship. All right, now check this out. There was this Greek or Roman god here named Dionysus, and she or he was the god of homosexuality and effeminacy. All right? This isn't uncommon, as I'm going to show you. This is a bronze head of Dionysus from 50 BC, from somewhere between 50 BC and 50 AD, and it's in the British Museum today. This one up here. If you notice, this one looks no different than a male homosexual today. If you notice, he's got a lot of male features, and not just male, but effeminate features. My friends, Dionysus is being worshipped today. How many Christians do you know of and are friends with on Facebook that put the rainbow flag, which obviously we know it was stolen. It's God. The rainbow belongs to God, not to Satan, but paganism has stolen it to represent homosexuality. How many friends do you know that go to church every Sunday, that try to present themselves as good people, good Christian people even? How many of them do you know that put the rainbow flag as their profile picture? Do you know what they're worshiping? They're putting Dionysus, the worship of homosexuality, obedience to Dionysus, over the obedience to Almighty God. Think about that. It's no different than it was before. All we're seeing is a decay of Christian society and paganism rearing its ugly snake head once again. And as a Christian, we're going to experience a different way of life than we're going to get to see who's a real Christian or not. We're going to be tested. It's not going to be just sitting around in our church coffee shops drinking coffee and tea. There's going to be persecution, my friends. All right, I'm going to read from page 336 of the Computation of 666. Those were the days when in the kingly, the Latin portion of the civilized world, the worship of Janus was at its height. Now, keep Janus in mind, because we're going to talk about her a little bit later in connection with Apple. But Janus was at its height, and in the spiritual aspect or Grecian contribution to civilization, the mysteries of Dionysus were influencing the whole development of thought. My friends, the mysteries of Dionysus are developing our whole thought process here in America today, as well as many of the other old Western Christian civilizations that are being taken over. And if etymology proves anything clearly, it proves that these two are the same God. For the ancient name of Janus is Dionysus. Now check that out. In other words, Janus and Dionysus are the same. That's going to mean something at the end of this study. Surely the same word as Dionysus and so on means God the serpent of India. Or it's the same word as Dionysus or Dionysus, same word as God the serpent of India. While the former name, the interminable wordplay of paganism being considered, is Jah or Dia from the Sanskrit, Nahash, the serpent, the living one. Now, as Dionysus was the god in whose mystical procession the phallus, or life-giving emblem, was assigned a prominent place, the one whose salutation was Iobake, the one who was called Io, just as the ecclesiastical writers translate Jah into Io, and just as Janus was the god who claimed the keys. So does Christ tell John that he, for the word I is emphatic, is the Alpha and Omega, the living one, and that he is the one that became dead, and behold, he is living forevermore and has the keys of hell and death, of death and Hades, and not the God, man, serpent. In other words, Dionysus, Janus, they both represent the God, man, serpent. Or, we know from Genesis chapter 3, verse 15, the serpent seed, the false Messiah coming from that false seed line. That you will it's barely ever taught today in Christian churches, yet it's the foundation of the entire plan of Jesus Christ, as well as the Antichrist. In other words, it's the foundation of the entire Bible, this battle going on between the serpent seed and the woman seed. So what we're beginning to see is the same serpent man going by Janus, Dionysus, and so forth. And guess what? He promotes sexual immorality. In fact, he himself, we're going to talk about it right here in a second. From Wikipedia here, LGBT themes in mythology. Now, you can even find it on Wikipedia where lesbian, gay, bisexual, transsexual, whatever all that means there, it was all throughout paganism. LGBT themes in mythology refers to mythologies and religious narratives that include stories of romantic affection or sexuality between figures of the same sex or feature divine actions that result in changes in gender. These myths have been interpreted as forms of LGBT, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender expression. The modern conceptions of sexuality and gender have been applied to them. Many mythologies ascribe homosexuality and gender variance in humans. Now check this out. To the action of gods or other supernatural interventions. We're going to document that. The fallen angels, the false gods that came in Genesis chapter 6, were homosexuals. and not just homosexuals, they're just sexual perverts going both ways, women and men and with each other. These myths, and they taught mankind to do the same. These myths include, this includes myths in which gods teach people about same sex, sexual practices. Who taught this perversion? Who taught homosexuality to mankind? Because it's only natural that men, I mean, the way God created man and woman, male and female, who inserted this perversion? You know, because people are not born gay, like is so often proclaimed today. That's a lie. Because that's, especially if you're a Christian, I can see if you're a pagan or whatever, you don't care what God's word says. But if you're a Christian, Jesus Christ made us male and female. He gave us our gender identity by the part that you have been given. That was when it was decided whether you were going to have female attractions or male attractions. When God formed you in the womb. Anything else that came about after that is the doings of, is the working of sin. And these sins appear to have been introduced to mankind by the fallen angels. That's why this practice seems to be, up on the top of the list of sins. I know I've heard teachers say, well, homosexuality isn't really that much different than stealing and stuff. It's just sin is sin. Yes, that's true to a certain extent. But different sins carry different penalties in the law. And there are different sins that invoke God's wrath more than others. They're not all just the same. Yeah, Christ can forgive them all the same. But when you're looking at unrepented sinners, they're not just all the same. And you know that because what was stealing? You just paid retribution. Okay, you didn't deserve the death penalty for stealing. You just had, to pay retribution. But what happened for murder? It was the death penalty. Even adultery was. As well as homosexuality. So there are degrees. All right.
I'm just going to keep reading here. The presence of LGBT themes in Western mythologies has long been recognized and the subject of intense studies. The application of gender studies and queer theory to non-Western mythic tradition is less developed, but has been growing since the end of the 20th century. Myths often include homosexuality, bisexuality, and transgenderism as a symbol, now check this out, as a symbol for sacred or mythic experiences. In other words, this is religious to them. David DeVoot Patnuk writes that myths capture the collective unconsciousness of a people, and that this means they reflect deep-rooted beliefs about variant sexualities that may be at odds with repressive social mores. Okay, all right, continuing on. Now, I'm not going to read all these here, but these are a list of a bunch of different gods, Greek and Roman gods, that were supposedly bisexual or homosexual. Look at this, Achilles, Athena, Apollo, we talked about him. Dionysus, of course, is in that list. Hermes, Apollo, and all these different, all kinds of this stuff going on. This isn't anything new. This is paganism being revived. All right. I'm going to read here from about Dionysus here. The patron god or patron god of intersex and transgender people is Dionysus, a god gestated in the thigh of his father Zeus, after his mother died from being overwhelmed by Zeus's true form. Other gods are sometimes considered patrons of homosexual love between males, such as the love goddess Aphrodite, and gods in her retinue, such as Eros, Himeros, and Pathos. Eros is also part of a triad of gods that played roles in homoerotic relationships, along with Heracles and Hermes, who bestowed qualities of beauty and loyalty, strength, eloquence, respectability onto male lovers. In the poetry of Sappho, Aphrodite is identified as the patron or patron of lesbians. Aphroditus was an androgynous Aphrodite from Cyprus. In later mythology, became known as so on and so forth. All right? And people, even some of them had sex changes. All right. How can I document in the Bible that these false gods that the pagans worshipped were introduced by the fallen angels themselves, as well as demonic influences of various kinds? And how can I document that those fallen angels were sexual perverts, to include homosexuals? Jude 1 verse 6, "And the angels which kept not their first estate, but left their own habitation, he hath reserved in everlasting chains unto darkness, unto the judgment of the great day." That means they're coming back, my friends, on the day or period of judgment. They're coming back. But here's the point here. Verse 7, "Even as Sodom and Gomorrah, and the cities about them in like manner, giving themselves over to fornication and going after strange flesh, are set forth an example, suffering the vengeance of eternal fire." In other words, what he's saying is these fallen angels did exactly like what they did in Sodom and Gomorrah. They went after strange flesh. It means they went after man with man, is what it's talking about here. Fallen angel with man even. And what is the point here? It says they are set forth as an example, suffering the vengeance of eternal fire. These fallen angels were homosexuals, bisexuals, and probably even disguised themselves as women to get a thrill out of turning on other men. "Likewise also these filthy dreamers defile the flesh, despise dominion, and speak evil of dignities." That's what's going on today with these homosexual parades and things like that. They're defiling their flesh. They're despising the dominion of God's word and speak evil of dignity, such as true marriage, a godly marriage, and so on. All right. O equals the sun or sun worship. And let's read a verse from Ezekiel 8, verse 15. It says, "Then he said unto me, Hast thou seen this, O son of man?" Now this chapter is a must read. If you want to know what's going on in our churches today, this chapter tells us that the churches have been infiltrated with paganism. All kinds of it. And Ezekiel goes in, God shows him in secret. He says, "Hey, look at what they're doing in the church. They're doing it in secret. They even had a separate room where they'd have their regular, it seemed as though when you read that chapter, they had the regular temple area where they performed their outward ceremonies to men, but then they had a secret chamber where they performed pagan rites and rituals. Verse 15, and he said to me, hast thou seen this, O son of man? Turn thee yet again, and thou shalt see greater abominations than these. Verse 16, and he brought me into the inner court of the Lord's house. And behold, at the door of the temple of the Lord, between the porch and the altar, were about 25 men. These were elders, with their backs toward the temple of the Lord, and their faces toward the east, and they worship the sun toward the east. Sun worship. What's going on today? Well, sun worship is here, my friends, in different forms. One way that people are worshiping, looking to the east, is through all this yoga that's going on. That's Eastern mysticism, presented as stretching and health. When they chant the OMs, OMs. All right. Speaking of O, many of us lament when we see this man because he is the picture of the destruction of America as we know it. You see, behind him is the big O. And we're going to talk about that. Obama's official icon. This is a rising sun inside an O for Obama. And rising sun over the horizon. And here looks like some kind of a path going somewhere. And this represents the dawning of a new age in politics under Obama. The time of change, and they're presenting it as light is rising upon a dark world. Think about that. Everything Obama looks at about Western Christian civilization, to him is darkness. And he's bringing change. He's bringing the light. Am I saying that Obama is the pagan sun god, is the Antichrist? No, I'm not saying that at all. Is it possible? Well, anything's possible. But I think that one is yet to come. But it is interesting that they're using these signs, these symbols that were of ancient paganism long ago. And it's all, I mean, it's in our faces, in our Christian civilization. Here's another picture of him. This one out and out presents him as the pagan sun god here. Look at that. Dream. Just dream. He even has the E pluribus unum here. Probably a perverted, blasphemous way of saying he is the one out of many. Or out of many, one. You see that there? In one of his campaigns here, he actually spoke in front of a, I can't remember the name of it now, but a what was known as the throne of Satan. One of the old, it was a replica of one of the old temples in Asia Minor. So basically, what you have with Obama claiming to bring light and change is this verse right here. Isaiah 5 verse 20. Woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, and that put darkness for light and light for darkness, and that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. They've done it. They've reversed it. They look at, you know, were we perfect? No, we weren't perfect, but we were a Western Christian civilization. In fact, we dare say that America was the greatest Christian nation to have ever existed upon the face of this earth. And that's looked upon as evil. Jesus is the Son of Righteousness, not Obama. There's that, and that's what we see, you know, Satan likes to copy everything that God does, and he perverts it. Again, the rainbow. It's a wonderful symbol of God's grace that he gave to Noah. And yet, the homosexuals fly it in God's face. Flaunt it. And they will get what they're going to get coming. God's judgment is coming. The throne of God is up in heaven. And he is the judge. Doesn't matter what our Supreme Court says. Our Supreme Court is a bunch of, for over half of them are a bunch of jokesters. They're not judges. All right, let's go back to iOS real quick here. What is this? And is this just a coincidence? Apple's iOS? Well, the first Apple One sold for $666.66 back in, here was an advertisement for it back in July of 1976. Now, what in the world? That is very odd. Wouldn't you say? But check this out. Here's another advertisement of it. This one says, bite into an apple for $666.66. Now, think about that for a minute, what that says to us. Bite into an apple or bite into the fruit of knowledge of good and evil. Of course, the apple in this sense, in most people's minds, they think of the tree of knowledge of good and evil as producing apples. Well, it's probably figs or something like that, but as far as a physical representation. But it's a spiritual tree with spiritual fruit on it. But here it says, bite into an apple, and it's going to cost you 666. So what is that saying there? To partake of the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil? In order to be able to do that, to have right to do that, are you going to have to take the 666 mark of the beast? Somehow, some way? Very interesting. We'll be talking about that some in our upcoming studies. But anyways, you might think, oh, that's still a coincidence. You know, what? That just can't be. Well, check this out. Genesis chapter 3, verse 6. I'm going to read it here. And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food and that it was pleasant to the eyes and a tree desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof and did eat and also gave unto her husband with her. And he did eat. Now check this out. This is apples. So this fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil is supposed to make somebody wise. It's supposed to make you smart. Well, check out this. Apple's original logo. They got Newton sitting here under a tree with an illuminated apple. Of course, this represents the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And wisdom coming from it. And you see there, Newton, a mind forever, voyaging through, and then it's blocked out, strange seasons, maybe seasons of thought alone. So what does the bitten apple mean in Apple's logo? Now, I use Apple products. We're in the world. And they're very good products. They work very good, and I like to use them to teach God's word. I like to use Satan's technology against him. It's only a smart thing to do. Anyways, what I'm doing, I'm trying to show you that paganism has hidden their stuff all throughout time. And we're supposed to be alert to it. That's what computing 666 is all about. For the wise to understand. Why? So you can understand what the enemy's doing. And you can protect yourself. And you can warn others about it. But here you see Newton reading here. This is nothing other than getting wisdom from Satan. It's not wisdom from God's word. All right. So the bitten apple represents taking of the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil to gain eye intelligence. You wonder what that word eye is for iPhone, iPad, and all that? Doesn't just mean internet. I even watched a video where Steve Jobs admitted that. And he said it means other things to them, but he wasn't specific. Anyways, another thing you see is Apple's Finder icon has a two-faced man here, which I have no doubt is a representation of the Roman god Janus. Now remember, Janus was the same god Dionysus. It's all the serpent man, the man serpent, the Antichrist. And possibly there's even bisexual or homosexual connotations here with a two-faced man having different feelings. But you might be thinking, well, Pastor Ben, you're reaching. Do you know who Steve Jobs was? Yeah, obviously, you know he was the founder of Apple and the CEO up until he died not too long ago. Made the iPhone or had the iPhone developed and the iPad and all kinds of stuff. Well, Steve Jobs is not a Christian. He was into Zen Buddhism, among other New Age stuff. And we saw it all the way back with the original Apple logo. So this isn't like we're stretching this. This is the philosophy. These are their religious beliefs. So what do you think? You don't think their religious beliefs are going to carry forth into their products? I know if I was a Christian, if I know that I'm a Christian, and if I'm going to make stuff, I'm going to put some of my Christian flavor to it. Well, pagans are no different. In fact, you know what's really interesting? To be able to develop computers like this, you're working with ciphers all the time. Secret codes. That's what computers are. You've got to be an expert at it. And that's what pagans get into a lot. Ciphers and codes, encryptions. God does the same thing as well. But anyways, he was into Zen Buddhism. You should check that out. So does the iOS in Apple represent the phallus, the sun seed, and the serpent? In other words, does it represent the seed of the serpent, the Antichrist? Well, put it all together. I mean, it could be a coincidence that iOS simply means Internet Operating System. But I can't hardly think it could be when you had the bitten apple representing the tree of knowledge of good and evil. You have Janus, the two-faced god. You got Steve Jobs as a Buddhist. His successor is a homosexual, Tim Cook. Their first computer sold for $666.66. I believe they even had a hidden name for their operating system. For one of their operating systems was Darwin or something like that. Then you have OS X. They like to use X and all that. And if you remember that, that was part of our acrostic in the name of blasphemy, that Greek letter X or key. So I think it probably does. Now, in the future, and we'll talk about it here in a little bit, just briefly, what we're seeing here is paganism is now, they've got technology now. Now, is all technology bad? No. But technology is going to play a great part in the new religion that's evolving right now. as it probably did when the fallen angels came before, when they brought all kinds of high technology and things like that. Anyways, Tim Cook here says, look at his black Apple logo with the light shining behind it. I'm proud to be gay, and I consider being gay among the greatest gifts God has given me. He went on to say, homosexuality is a part of who I am. My same-sex desires come naturally to me. No, they don't come naturally. They are not my fault. And in fact, I was probably born this way. Thus, they are either a bereft of spiritual and moral significance, or B, the more grandiose homosexual lie, something to thank God for. A just and fair God would not force me to deny myself the way he made me to follow him. Is that true? God, did God make him a homosexual? What did he give him? What identity did he give him? He gave him a male unit. So what is the opposite of that? A female. I don't know. What does the I mean to Apple? Well, it means they didn't really say exactly. But I think it's part of this cipher that we've been talking about. And it also, I believe it means intelligence, illuminated. Many of you heard about the Illuminati. Illuminated, and it also has to do, I believe, with I, me, myself, and I. Put yourself first. You, like Satan's first lie in the Garden of Eden, that was part of the partaking of the fruit. You can become gods, deciding for yourself what is good and evil. That's Satan's big lie, and it's at the root of all of his religions. False religions, false gods. Pleasure, wisdom, and self-salvation. In fact, what we're going to see here with the synthesis of science and technology and religion is man's going to try to attempt to find his own way to salvation. He's going to try to improve upon his God-given body and start manipulating even down to the source code called DNA. That's all part of Revelation, my friend. All right. Helena Petrova Blavatsky. She wrote a book 100 years ago or so called The Secret Doctrine. And it was about the synthesis of science, religion, and philosophy. So this has been in the works for some time now. The synthesis of science and religion. It's all part of this New Age movement, the age of the Antichrist. All right. So what we talked about here was this cipher here, iOS, that was, I believe, is in the text of the Greek text of the Bible, of Revelation 13, verse 18. Now the U is missing. We haven't talked about that, and I'm not sure why that would be. It does seem to make a distorted version of Jesus in a blasphemous way. But other than that, there might be something more to it. But I'm going to go to here, and I was actually going to put this verse somewhere else. Matthew 19, verse 4. And he answered and said unto me, have you not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, not father and father, or not mother and mother, father and mother, and shall cleave to his wife. Did it say cleave to his husband? No, to wife. And they twain shall be called one flesh, and they shall be one flesh. Wherefore, what God has joined together, let no man put apart. Okay. So Tim Cook and others saying, well, God gave me this as a gift. That's not what God's word says. It's a lie. It's a blasphemous lie trying to cover up sin, trying to justify sin and perversion. So what does all this mean? Well, as you look around you, and why is it important? Well, because as you look around you, you got to be able to decipher paganism to try to protect your children from lies and deception, to guard yourself, and just so that you can see what's going on. So that's why studies like this is important. That's why we did, that's why we spent so much time on Revelation 13, verse 18. Because the book of Revelation is written in a way to expose paganism through the use of symbols and so forth. In other words, we're supposed to understand paganism so that it doesn't work into our churches, it doesn't work into our homes, it doesn't work into our way of life, and so that we be not deceived. All right, hey, I hope you enjoyed that study. Do like what Christ said in Matthew chapter 4. When tempted of the devil, he said, "Man does not live by bread alone, but by every word of God." So see that you study it every single day. Consume it, digest it, meditate upon it, so that you can be a Christian overcomer. Christian Overcomers is brought to you by the tithes and offerings of our listeners. If you'd like to support our ministry, please go to ChristianOvercomers.com. God bless you, and thank you for your support.
Thine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He is trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored. He has loosed the fateful lightning of his terrible sword. His truth is marching on.